Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wole, and Will T. Ray Jeezy is out with, and we are also part of Empire Media. You can check us out at empiremedia.com. Will T, what's good, my man?
Nothing much, man. I think you said it wrong. It's supposed to be the urban. It's Will in the urban sports.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot. Let me, matter of fact, you do the intro, Will. Go ahead. Do it, bro.
Good evening, everyone. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Excuse me, you're listening to Will featuring the Urban Sports Scene.
All right.
Tonight featuring Wole.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Featuring Wole.
Okay, I got demoted to featuring. That's cool. Hey, bro, like you said, it's your show, man. I'm here for you, man. Hey, so what's going on, man? Today's a good day for me, man. I'm not going to lie. As a Laker fan, today is a great day. Like, it's an amazing day.
Oh, man, listen. For Lakers fans, I said this last year.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers lost the championship when they let Dwight Howard go.
Yeah.
Because what he's able to do for them defensively.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to erase a lot of mistakes. So I'm not going to go as far as to say the Lakers are going to win the championship next year, but I think they definitely have put themselves in a position to make a run at least to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I agree, Will T. I just think also, you know, you're adding Monk, a younger player, and he gets an opportunity basketball team. So he's an opportunity to kind of showcase his talents because this team needs a player like him. We're not really going to talk about the Lakers, but I'm just saying they need a player like him on their roster because this is a DMV team, DMV show, and I don't want to go all in on my Lakers. I was kind of geeked, though. That's all I'm going to say. I was kind of geeked. Because of it, and overall,
I mean, I think a lot of NBA fans should be geeked, man. You know, you had the draft last Thursday. Then you had free agency start Monday.
Yeah,
you still have USA basketball in contention for a gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a basketball fan, man, it's been an exciting couple of days.
Sure has, man. It sure has. I mentioned Empire Media. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kahn Report, hosted by ESPN Washington football team insider John Kahn, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene.
This show can be found on Podcast DC, the new local app with hundreds of options and local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all the Empire shows as well as the other great content. Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and to hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates.
Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. Tony McGee's Pro Football Plus Washington football team reporter Donna Hopkins, the great Donna Hopkins, will join the show to talk about the start of the Washington football team training camp. At 8:30, we'll talk about the Washington Wizards NBA draft selections of the offseason moves, including the Wizards trading Russell Westbrook to the Lakers, founder of Double Take Sports, co-host of the Triple W podcast and Sports Journeys, Washington Wizards reporter Karita Parks will join us to talk about that and much more. That's a lot. I'm sorry, y'all. They traded away Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats will join us to discuss.
That Mike Rizzo, he listened to the show.
You better listen, bro.
The show.
Hey, but first, right now we have Tony McGee's Pro Football Plus Washington football team reporter, Donna Hopkins, on the line. What's good, Donna?
What's up, fellas? You know what?
You all were going to make me go into that basketball.
I know.
You're talking about the Lakers. But you know what? I'm not going to go there because we're talking football. You were going to make me go there. I was biting my tongue while I was.
I know you were.
Come on. But I'm not going to even get into the Lakers and the basketball part. I'm going to leave that to Rita.
Go Dwight.
And I'm dying too, but we're going to talk football. I'm going to leave it there.
Oh man, Will, the floor is yours, my man.
I already been Wally's ear yesterday.
I know, that's why I ain't saying nothing, Dom. That's why I kept it quiet. I kept the peace.
All right. Yeah, so I'm first not going to go you, there. But I'm
how
a
you
Laker
doing
fan
this evening,
too.
Donna?
I'm doing
how you doing this evening?
What's up, Will?
Nothing much. Have a question for you. You've been covering this team in training camp. Now we know of the suspension of Daniel Snyder, him being suspended indefinitely from running the day-to-day operations of the team. From your sense and, you know, you being around the team, have you gathered that anything is different this year opposed to years past when he's been the figurehead of the organization?
You can see a shift overall. I mean, just with Ron Rivera there, and now, like you said, Dan Snyder is not out there, but it was good to see Jason and Tanya Snyder out that practice in Richmond on Friday. So it was, I mean, they were entrenched in the fanfare and rallying up the fans and just being visible, you know. And Tanya Snyder was out at practice, you know, one night practice also at Richmond. So it was kind of good to see how she has really entrenched herself into really being a part of the organization and really being more visible this year than she has in the past because of the situation that happened with the Washington football team. So I think that, you know, this team is looking to take it in another direction. And I was telling someone about the experience that you have in Baltimore when you walk up to the stadium and before you get there, they have all kind of activities and stuff like that. So I think this Washington football team is trying to bring back, you know, since the fans weren't there last year, is to bring back the, you know, the fans and have them be confident in what the direction that they're taking this team. So it was kind of good to see that out there in Richmond.
All right, one more follow-up, not a follow-up question, but rather another question for you. We've heard Ron Rivera express his concern / frustration over the lack of players being vaccinated, for lack of a better word, for COVID-19. Do you anticipate that there'll be potential breakouts of? Or I know this isn't easy for you to answer, but you know, do you get a sense that this team has kind of a backup plan if there is a large breakout amongst a certain position group?
See, that's going to be tough because already throughout the week in Richmond, they had 6 players to be placed on the COVID protocol list, and it was some starters that was placed on there, some big name guys. So it's already concerned. You talk about a team last year that handled this well and didn't really have any cases much throughout the whole season, and that's because it was more so teams were in kind of like a bubble type situation. But once things started to be opening up nationwide, you saw more cases come up. And most of the guys that have gotten that's on the protocol list, COVID protocol list, is linemen, which are always in each other's faces a little bit more. So it's a concern because Ron Rivera was asked that question as far as how do you, you know, work this out, you know, moving forward. And we already know that the NFL has come out with a strict mandate, trying to get players to get vaccinated, is that you may have to forfeit a game or a paycheck, depending on which team calls the games to be canceled. And they don't have a chance to make up games this year because it's an extra game on the schedule. So I think that he somewhat has a game plan. But remember last year when Denver didn't even have a quarterback to play in a game, you know, because of the COVID situation. So I think that you may see a little bit more of that, being that quite a few players on this Washington football team have not gotten vaccinated. It may be like 30-some people still, but one of those 30-some people are starters on a 53-man roster. What do you do in that situation? So I think he has to work this out as it goes along, because you just don't know. And I'm sure he has somewhat of a game plan, but you know, you just don't know how you're going to really handle this until the situation presents itself. Like in practice last week, two linemen was taken out of practice because I guess, you know, they had to be put on the COVID protocol list. So I think this is going to be a concern across, not just for this football team, but across the NFL, if you don't have more players, you know, being vaccinated. And a few more did get vaccinated last week in Richmond, but so many more need to take place. And, you know, with your question about, does Ron Rivera have a game plan? I'm sure that he has some sense of how he may handle this, but you just don't know, because it's you know, which players are going to come up testing positive. So I think it's just you got to take it day by day. And, you know, like you said, he's frustrated because you got a coach that's system is compromised because of going through the cancer and the treatment last year. So you would have thought that a lot more players would rally behind him in getting the vaccine, not just for him, but as a team overall.
Yeah, I agree, Donna. I think that if you're Coach Rivera, you're looking at it like we're a family. We're supposed to be a family. We're a brotherhood. And, you know, I had to go through this, you know, this ordeal and this serious situation with cancer. And, I'm, you know, your immune system is obviously compromised. And, you know, just looking out for me, you know, it'd be good if most of you all get the vaccine. Because if I catch it, you know, who knows what can happen, even if I'm vaccinated. You know, again, my immune system is compromised. So even with the vaccine, there is a chance that something can happen to me.
And some of your leaders are starting to step forward. I know that a day ago, Terry McLaurin, wide receiver Terry McLaurin, stepped up and, you know, tried to rally his other teammates to get the vaccine. And so hopefully more players speaking up, that other guys will kind of like the heed to it. And I don't know, you know, the funny thing about it is, and I say that, you know, using that, is that they wanted more information. So the team brought in, you know, different people to explain the whole situation, mm-hmm. give them more details to be able to make a decision. But it comes to a point where how much more do you have to know? Is people dying, and, you know, this Delta variant is out, and it's easier to catch more so than the first go around. So I don't know what more do you need to know with the information is out there. It just comes down to a situation where you either going to take it or you're not. And hopefully, you know, you don't affect somebody where, you know, your coach ends up being sick because of this, or mm-hmm. other people in general.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, let's go to training camp talk, the actual performance, because I don't want people listening saying, thinking that we're being political or whatnot. So what
we're
are
being political? We're just being factual.
I know, but you know how people are, Donna. They take everything and they go left and right with it. You know what I mean? A lot of people are like, just talk sports. Just talk sports. You can't be real life. You can't have a real life thought process. But all right. The training camp started last week. We're all talking about training camp. For you, what were some of the big? What are some of the surprising storylines in camp?
I think the competition at wide receiver is going to be one to just watch, because you got 9 guys that have really been playing well. I mean, overall, and Coach Ron Rivera said that in a situation where you got that much talent, and you know you're only probably going to keep 6 receivers at max, and some of those guys are going to make it because of their special teams play, which is the key. But when you look at the wide receiver core, I mean, you know, you got Terry McLaurin, which is a shoe-in as far as that. And then you've got Deonte Brown, which is the rookie, which he has been most impressive in his training camp, because I think he had a solid 4 days in Richmond. Mm-hmm. He's got speed. I mean, he gets open. And they like what they see in him so far. And he seems to get better each day that you see him plan. He's a playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got, you know, the Andre Carter, which this guy is a special teams guy. He's going to be returning punts. And I think that that almost shoes him in because, you know, that's an area last year that the punt returning, kick mm-hmm. returning, you had to, you know, it was shaky right there. And I know that Steven Sims was also a return man. So he's going to be fighting to get on this team. And then you got Cam Sims, who is a big target, and he's had a pretty good camp overall, too. You know, the thing about him, people said, well, he make a big play and then he drops the ball and whatever. But you can get big targets, and they like him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got Antonio Gandy-Golden, who mm-hmm. has also played well. Kevin Harmon is back off that injury that he had, and he looked good. I mean, pretty solid. He's a good special teams player, so you look at him to say, well, you know, if he's on the bubble, then that special teams may carry him over that. And, you know, and then you get Adam Humphries, who I think he's a shoe-in to make this team also. And then Isaac Wright. So when you look at that core of receivers, you're like, wow, we got a good group right there. And then, you know, the running back position to me is pretty solid too, because Antonio Gibson, he still got some broken back there in Richmond, because some of the moves that he put on them, and you know, he's coming back from the toe injuries and he don't like anybody to talk about that, but he's looked really good in training camp. And like I said, I watched him one practice and he broke my neck because I was like, what kind of move was that? I mean, his cutbacks and everything is pretty nice to watch, and hopefully he can stay healthy because, you know, he's so key coming out the backfield also, along with, you know, running, catching out the backfield. And then you've got J.D. McKissick, who has played well and looks good. But the next positions are going to be up for grabs as far as Peyton Barber, Lamar Miller, and Jerod Patterson. So all of the running backs have really looked pretty impressive. But the key thing I think that's going to take them over the edge is blocking, who can block better between those last three guys I talked about. And also, who can catch the ball out of the backfield, you know, too. Other position is the tight end. You know, he's going to be a playmaker, but the question is, who's after him? And most of all these guys, like John Bates and Hemingway and Sammy Reeves, which he was hurt. He nicked his knee in practice today. So I know Lake Lewis, one of our friends, says that's who he thinks going to make it, but because he's a good blocker, and that's what it's going to come down to, who's the better blocker, because, you know, the tight ends more so, they want them to block. But Logan Thomas was basically a tight end that caught a lot of balls because of the fact that they didn't have the receiving core. So the tight end position is one to watch closely to see who's going to be that backup behind Logan Thomas. And on the offensive side of the ball also, the offensive line got pushed around a lot by the defense in Richmond. So it's question marks as far as how well they're going to play. And I didn't even mention the quarterback situation yet.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that one, Danny. Donna, we'll get to that.
We'll get there. Donna, I do have one more additional question for you. What are some of the stories or storylines that the fans should be paying attention to during training camp so far?
Well, the storylines, I think more so is they're happy to be back out there, but I think that the storylines on defense is one, the defensive line. I don't think that anybody will be surprised that they are tough, but I think on the defensive side, also on the defensive line, is Monte Sweat has really stepped up. I mean, when you watch him out at training camp in Richmond, he's more vocal. It's almost like he's more sure of himself. I thought that he should have been part of the Pro Bowl last year with his play. But I think
he
stepped up to be a more vocal leader, and he's got that swagger about him this year. And I think that fans are seeing a different Monte Sweat this year than they've had seen in the past. So that's one of the storylines there. And I think the other storyline for the fans is Terry McLaurin and just the leadership role that he's taken as far as him being more vocal, even more so this year. I saw that out at OTAs earlier during the year, and you could just see his leadership and you know, his play even has gotten even better. But I think that's another storyline, those two guys on the defensive side and the offensive side. And the other storyline, I guess, it would be at the safety position where you've got Landon Collins, who is coming back off of that Achilles injury. And, you know, when you look at his play before he got injured last year, and it could be him trying to figure out the defense and so forth, but he struggled last year, but he's had a strong camp so far this year. And that's another storyline for the fans to probably watch because, I mean, do you start him and then you've got Cam Curl and then you've got McClain. McClain plays a little more of cornerback. But I think that position as far as how do you intergrind those two guys, Collins and Curl, into that the lineup as far as taking them in and out. And so Collins has stepped back up, and it's like, wow, his play is really has been well. And I think the other thing that the fans are probably the storyline is the quarterback situation. I mean, I know we're going to talk about that a little bit.
Like right now.
we can hop on.
Yeah, hop right now. Talk about right now, Donna. Uh-huh. Go right into it.
Storyline because storyline because I have questions there and I'm not for sure if the fans are secure about, you know, the play of the quarterback right now, because I think that they struggled down in Richmond. I saw some good things. I saw a lot of things that need to improve overall. And I know that Ryan Fitzpatrick has been, you know, the starter, deemed the starter. And then you've got, you know, Taylor Heineke, you know, backing them up. And then you got Cal Allen, who has, you know, played well, but he got nicked the ankle a little bit in Richmond. But I still think it's a storyline there because Fitzpatrick, I saw a lot of balls being batted down by the defense. And I know everybody's going to say, man, he's gone up against one of the greatest defensive lines in the Washington football team. But he got a lot of balls batted down still. And they wasn't even coming at him full speed. But a lot of times he probably would have got sacked. Mm-hmm. And then he hit some things, too. Mm-hmm. I think that Heineken gives you a better chance in some instances to extend the play because of his feet and like I said, Cal Allen did some good things, but and I know that Fitzpatrick said that he's still learning Scott Turner's offensive scheme and getting comfortable with the receivers, and hopefully, you know, as we go along in the next 4 weeks and he'll get more comfortable with that you'll see improvement in his. And I know everybody say he's a journeyman and he's been around, he started some and he's backed up and all of those things. But at the end of the day, I want to see that veteran play be solid, more solid than it is right now.
Yeah. I'm with you the quarterback, you know, we talked about this before, with the quarterback, with Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, he's a gamer to me. So we'll see how he is, you know, in game situations. But so I want to ask you this. So if it was you, would you be leaning towards Taylor Heineke over Ryan Fitzpatrick from what you saw at camp, from what you've been seeing in camp?
I don't think that one has outshined the other yet. Okay. They both done some good things, you know, so nobody has really, you know, made that 100% move yet that say, oh man, his play is so solid out there that, yeah, he should be the starter. I don't think that is there yet from either player.
Okay.
I like I said, I think that Heineken has done some good things. I mean, his long ball seems to be a little more accurate. But but Ryan, you know, he reads defenses and so forth, although those batted balls a lot that was down. But, you know, he's shorter, but I think it's going to be a telltale because training camp is training camp. You don't know until they get into the first preseason game and they're playing across the ball from the other opponent.
Of course.
And that's when you're going to be able to tell a little bit more about the blocking of the offensive line. Is he going to have the protection, whether it's Heineken in there or Fitzpatrick or you know, that's going to be the telltale. And I don't think anybody has really stepped up to that I can say that they've looked great in practice all the way around.
Okay.
That hasn't happened yet.
Okay. So, Don, before I let you go, I do have one last question before I let you go. If we had to give a Donna Award, you know what I mean, the most outstanding person you've seen so far in training camp, which player would get that award?
Wide receiver Brown. Yami Brown.
Wow. Okay. Wow,
yeah.
He's that good.
Yeah,
okay.
Because he doesn't look like he fears anybody. I mean, he's going up against all the cornerbacks and beating them and making plays. And I haven't seen him drop really many balls. I remember one practice, he didn't drop one ball.
Mm.
And the great thing about this Washington football team this year is that they've got speed. They're a young group. They've got speed. Which they haven't had this kind of speed before. So he's the one to me that I would say that has impressed me the most right now.
All right, got the Don Estello Award. That's what I'm talking about. I like to hear Deami Brown. Got,
yeah,
all right, that's
yeah.
what I'm talking about. That is what I'm talking about. So, Don, before I let you go, how can our listeners catch the show? I mean, your show, the Tony McGee Pro Football Plus show. And also, how can they hit you up on social media? And please plug all of your social media and don't leave out the one we were talking about last night. Okay, now you can go. I'm just saying, Donna. I'm just saying. I did this on purpose. I know how you are. There you go.
I know you. Tony D Pro Football Plus is on Mid-Atlantic Sportsnet, Nathan. We're getting ready to kick off the season later on this month, but you can catch us on, you know, the social media outlets. My Instagram is DJ Hop, and also Twitter. And I know, Wally, you telling me, get back to Twitter.
Look, I even know your Twitter handle, Donna. It's at Donna Hopkins and a bunch of underscores. See, I know your Twitter handle.
And then, you know, easy way to just just put Donna J. Hopkins.
Oh, there you go.
Could probably pull me up and find me.
Yeah, she's exactly, because she's that famous. All you gotta do is put her name on Google, and then she's everywhere. She's everywhere. She's she's on Good Morning America. She's on everywhere. She's that person.
Hey, Wally, this is because I'm working hard.
I see you, Donna. I told you a star. I told you this, Donna. You a star, hands down. Hey, Donna, thanks for being on it. You know, I appreciate you. We'll have to have Caridi on the other side of the town.
With you, and Will.
You know it, Donna. You know it. Anytime.
Next time y'all got a clue being on the Lakers talk.
Donna, we got you. I got you.
I don't necessarily agree with you all.
I know you don't. I know. That's why I said it in the beginning, because I knew you didn't. I knew she didn't. That's why I said it in the beginning.
But I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not talking about basketball because they're going to get me riled up.
We'll definitely have you back throughout the, you know, as the season we get closer to basketball season for you to give us your thoughts.
Definitely.
All right, Donna.
Guys, as always, it's a pleasure. Have a great one.
Same here. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Donna. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
All right. Again, that was Tony McGee's Pro Football Plus Washington Football Team reporter, Donna Hopkins. She's amazing. She's one of my favorite folks. All right. The Wizards traded away Westbrook. We will discuss the direction of the Wizards with founder of Double Take Sports, co-host of the Triple W podcast, and Sports Journey's Wizards reporter, Caridi Parks. After the break, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Also on Empire Media.
On AmpireMedia.com.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T and myself, Wole. I mean, Will T would tell you like he's the star, so it'd be like the Urban Sports Scene with Will featuring Wole. I guess that's how it goes or something like that. All right, but
yeah, I mean, that's how it should read.
We're also part of Ampire Media. Hey, right now we have founder of Double Take Sports, Sports Journeys, Washington Wizards reporter and co-host of the Triple W podcast, Karita Parks, on the line. What's going on, Karita?
What's up? Good to be online with you tonight.
We're glad to have you on. Right, Will T?
Definitely glad. Absolutely. Absolutely. How you doing, Miss Parks?
Good.
You said Miss Parks. You are making her proper. You're making her real proper right now, Miss Parks.
Listen, when she called in, she was extremely proper. So that's why I think I should have to call her. She's obviously elevated herself from just Karita Parks to Miss Parks.
Miss Parker, it's like I'm watching Friday or something. Hello, Miss Parker. I don't know what's going on right now, bro.
Not bad.
I don't know what's happening right now. Oh my God! So what's going on, Karita? How's the podcast? Triple W. The Triple Dub.
Everything is good. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of Wizards news. We are looking to cover a little bit of the Mystics' second half of their season to kind of keep things going, but everything's great.
Awesome. All right, you mentioned the Wizards last week. The Wizards traded Russell Westbrook for the 2024 second round pick and 2028 second round pick to the LA Lakers for Kyle Kuzma, KCP. That's a Caldwell Pope, Montrezl Harrell, and the number 22nd draft pick, which the Wizards traded to the Pacers for Aaron Holiday, and the 31st draft pick, which turned out to be Isaiah Todd. What were your thoughts on the trade?
Well, I wasn't completely surprised in the sense that I wasn't sure if Russell Westbrook was going to be here past the year, and then especially with Coach Scott Brooks being fired, I didn't think that he would necessarily want to be here. But at the same time, with his contract, didn't know if it would be easy to trade him. So I think that it was interesting that the Wizards were able to pull that off. And they get more depth on their roster at this point, which I know for Tommy Shepard is something that he wanted to focus on is depth. Mm-hmm. But I guess we'll see, because I know that there's also – they need another point guard. Mm-hmm. So are they going to keep all those guys or use some of them as trade assets?
Yeah.
There's also a question.
Well, it's weird that they're about to sign Spencer Dinwiddie. I think he's a two guard playing the one, but how would that be if they signed Dinwiddie? Was that a good?
As far as fit, I think anyone can fit.
You mean play?
right. Well, I mean, he averages about 20 points a game, mm-hmm. which is along the same lines as Russell Westbrook, except, you know, Spencer's not necessarily like a triple W dub machine.
Mm-hmm.
I keep wanting to say triple W. like our podcast.
I know. That's okay. Look. You got to claim it. You got to claim
it. Thinking about myself. But, yeah, he's not a triple-double machine like Russell Westbrook in a sense, but I think he would mesh with Bradley Beal. And there's just really, I was just trying to think, like there's no other, I think, point guards of free agency right now. I mean, there are, but who would be a fit? So I think going with Dinwiddie is just what they have to do at this point.
Okay, you are listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Ampire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com. Right now, we are talking to Karita Parks, founder of Double Take Sports, co-host of the Triple W podcast and Sports Journeys Wizards reporter. Okay, Karita, let's get back to the draft. The one pick that the Wizards did own, which was the 15th pick, they used that selection on Corey Kispert out of Gonzaga. Are you a fan of that selection?
I
wasn't really blown away by the selection. You know, I get the fact that the Wizards were not good in the three-point shooting. They only had Davis Bertans. Kispert is a good three-point shooter. The new coach, Wes Unseld Jr., he said that he also is a better defensive player than we think, which, in my opinion, it's almost like he just drafted someone similar to Davis Bertans, except Davis cannot defend. So I'm just feeling it like that. Unless they plan to do something with Davis, but they pay him so much money, you know, I'm just not sure if drafting Kispert at this point was the direction that they should have went. I think there was a lot more talent on the board. They, in my opinion, there's other pieces that they could use, but that's what they went with. So, you know.
You know what, Karita? Yeah. That's why I like having you on this show. Not only do you inform the people, you are extremely smart in your analysis when it comes to the players on the Wizards roster. And I'm just going to be honest with you. I wasn't feeling the pick either. You know, I see Corey Kispert, and I know that, you know, he's a better defender than we think he is. But when I see him and I think of his game at the next level, I just think of a specialist, right?
Yeah, he is. And that's what he is.
If you're the Wizards who really aren't, you know, you made the playoffs last year, but let's be realistic, you aren't anywhere close to competing for the Eastern, you know, for getting in the top four positions in the East. You need to draft someone who's multifaceted and not just a specialist that can only help you in one way.
Look, man, they signed, they got a trade. They traded and they got Kyle Kuzma, man. Like, they got a dude. And Kyle Kuzma, he's gonna be at Rose. He's gonna be at the Rose Bar. He's gonna be at the Rose Bar chilling. You know what I'm saying? So he's gonna be out there in these streets, and he's gonna come back.
I need to know why you're so convinced he'll be at.
Oh, I know he's gonna. Man, he's going to be at the Rose Bar. He may even beat his feet too. He may be hanging with the youngest and be beating his feet. I'm serious. Like Kyle Kuzma's gonna be all about the city. Like, yes.
You think Kyle Kuzma's gonna reach out to John Wall and say, hey, John,
hey, I bet you, I'm telling you,
put me down with your club.
He gonna reach out to John Wall. He gonna reach out to JaVale McGee because they used to be on the same squad together. He ain't JaVale. He was here in the city. Where do I need to go? Like to make sure I have a good time. I'm telling you, Kyle Kuzma is going to be, if we go retro like we were when we were younger and we go in the city and just start walking around, I guarantee you we see Kyle Kuzma like we used to see Andre Blotch. I guarantee it, bro. I guarantee it.
All right, let's talk about another addition that the Wizards made the draft. With the 31st pick, they selected G-Leaguer Isaiah Todd, who was a top high school prospect before joining the G-League last year. Karita, does this kid have the legit chance to make an impact on this team?
I would say he does, only because as we said, this team, you know, is I don't want to be hard on them, but they're average right now, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, so average.
So I think
you're not being hard. You're just speaking your truth.
They're not the Lakers, Karita. They're not the Lakers. You're right. They are average. They're not the Lakers. They're not even close to being great.
Now, you know, we're not going to go there. We are going to keep the peace tonight.
Yes, I'm sorry. I apologize. Continue, Karita. Continue. I apologize. I'm sorry.
But, you know, I definitely think that he has an opportunity for sure. But it also just depends, especially with a new coach as well. Like, I'm really interested to see how he moves and what decisions he makes. But I think at this point, it's anybody's game. Except, I mean, you got Surefire. You got, like, Rui, Denny. You know, you have your main pieces. But other than that, I think that it's anybody's game to come in and make an impact.
So, for this team, I mean, what do you think the overall direction is in with this team? And what I mean by that is, like, for Bradley Beal, like, what – are these guys that Bradley Beal can lead? Are these guys you think that Bradley Beal kind of wants. But again, because why I say that is that this team is built around Bradley Beal, and I'm sure he's been talked to about all of these players. Like, should we bring this guy in? What do you think of this guy? Like, is this a good fit for you? Like, would you like playing with this guy? Because I haven't heard that he's close friends with KCP. I didn't know that at first, but I heard he's super tight with KCP. So I just want to know, like, are some of these signings and draftees and people they're trading for or whatnot, like, is this part of the Bradley Beal plan?
Now, the draftees, I don't know if that's a part of the Bradley Beal plan. Now, the guys brought in through the trade, I believe that Brad probably was okay with those, with them. And like, he's, I mean, Kuzma, he gets a lot of slack, but he's not a bad player.
No, he's not.
You know what I mean?
He's not a bad player. I'm serious. He's not a bad player. I'm not even joking.
No, he's not.
I'm not even joking.
No, he's not. I think what he's proven to be is, and this is no disrespect to him, is he's a run-of-the-mill average NBA player, which isn't a terrible thing considering just how great these guys are.
Yeah.
But if you're looking to put together a winning team,
there you go.
If you're hoping to woo Bradley Beal to sign another extension, you have to ask yourself, does Kyle Kuzma as your potential number two or number three, will he help take this team within the top four in the East? And I don't think I could say yes to that question.
I will say this, though.
What about you, Karina?
I was just about to agree. I mean, I don't think, no. I still feel like we're in this constant rebuild mode.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we added pieces, but I don't see any of the pieces that we added just making this immediate impact to where, you know, the Wizards excel to another level. And the whole, I'm with building the team around Bradley Beal, I suppose. But I suppose, because it just seems we are working so hard to build this team. I shouldn't say we. They are working so hard, particularly Tommy Shepard in the front office, to build this team around Bradley Beal. And we don't even know if he's going to stay number one.
Yeah. Yeah.
He says he wants to be here, but we don't know if he's going to stay. And then number two, it just seems like we keep adding these pieces around him, and we just end up kind of being in the same place.
Yeah, to be real with you, with the situation is that for Beal, and I think Washington fans, I don't care if I'm going to piss off a couple Washington fans, but they have to be real about the situation, like about Bradley Beal. They get so fixated about him scoring 30 points, but we know this in terms of, we're talking about, you know, winning, and Will mentioned, and he referenced that, and I totally agree about Kuz, because I've had the same discussion about Kuz even in L.A., but we're talking about winning, right, and being the guy for a winning team or a winning organization, when we talk winning, we're talking about championships, right? We're not gonna just say winning to get to the playoffs. We're talking about trying to win the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
Bradley Beal is not your number one. He's not your number one. So, you don't look at Bradley Beal and say he's going to lead you to the promised land. He is a good. He's probably a two. He's a two, but he's not a number one. So you're building your team around a number two. That's what the Wizards have to kind of think about and say, to see if that's what the route they want to go. Do they want to be a team that's consistently a 4-5 seeded team? That's cool. If that's what their goal is, if they're a team that has aspirations to win a championship, then they have to have the thought process that Bradley Beal isn't the guy that's going to lead you to the promised land. He's not that guy.
Well,
let me ask you
the thought right now.
Karina, let me ask you this question. Do you think that, you know, we know that Bradley Beal can score. He can lead, you know, potentially lead the league in scoring. But do you think he is capable of being the centerpiece of a championship organization?
So I spoke on this a little bit yesterday. And my issue, like you said, no, it's nothing. You wouldn't know that, so it's nothing. I don't mind repeating myself. Trust me, I don't mind. But for me, it's like you both said. Bradley Beal, he's talented. He's going to score 50 points and such. But my biggest issue for me with Brad is I've seen him miss so many, in my opinion, game-winning shots. Mm-hmm. And to me, if you're the number one, you have to make those shots. And I have seen for season after season, I mean, don't get me wrong, here and there he'll make a clutch shot. But when it comes to those clutch shots in the game, it's on you, it's on your shoulders. I don't feel like he comes through. And to me, that doesn't make you a number one.
Preach. I'm sorry.
A number one.
Sorry.
And I know like Michael Jordan is extreme, but I'm just saying like a number one, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. I mean, like those
LeBron.
Kind of guys.
You better say LeBron. Why you?
LeBron.
Why you?
Well,
okay, I know you don't want to, but say it. You don't want the want to, but you're going to have to say
I'm
it, though.
It. You said it.
I'll
have to repeat it.
Shoot, you can say Giannis now. Giannis, too, now. You can say Giannis
so
now.
So that, for me, I'm
going to
leave it there.
Okay.
Will, do you think he is, though? Will, how about you, Will? What do you think, bro?
I think Bradley Beal. No. I think Bradley Beal is a – no. I think Bradley Beal is a dynamic scorer.
Yeah.
Like, he has a knack. He's developed
so
into
true.
A guy who could be a 1A, but I don't necessarily think – that Bradley Beal at this point is a guy who's going to lead a team to a championship.
Mm.
He's not going to, and the simple fact that he's not going to impose his will on his teammates and try to push them, from what I gather, and I don't know if this is true or not, from what I gather when I see him communicating on the floor, he doesn't seem as if he's imposing his will and trying to make his team, take his teammates to the next level, right?
Mm-hmm.
With trying to, not nitpick, but when something's going wrong, pulling guys over and saying, hey, we were supposed to run this set. We were supposed to do it this way. You know, keep your eyes open. You know, that was a terrible pass, things of that nature. So I don't necessarily think at this point he is. But could he over the next couple of years, once he, you know, he gets into his 30s and he gets a little bit more, I'm not going to say desperate, but he's
seasoned.
It gets a greater sense of urgency towards the end of his career, possibly.
It's possible. I mean, we hope the best for young Brad. Hey, but Carita, before I let you go, I want to say thank you for being on. You know, we always appreciate you. Please let our listeners know how they can catch you on social media and remind them how they can tune into your podcast.
Yes, so you can catch me on social media at Carita C. Parks. That's on Twitter and Instagram. Also, be sure to support my company, Double Take Sports.
Love
that's
it.
At DBL Take Sports. And last but not least, you can check out the Triple W Podcast. You can follow us on social media at Triple W Pod, and we're also on Spotify and iTunes.
Well, Carita, you know, we appreciate you. Thank you for being on. You rock.
Thank you, Carita. We appreciate
you. And thank you, Miss Parks. We appreciate you, Miss Parks. You sound so proper, Miss Parks.
Anytime.
Oh, man. Hey, Will T, we don't got to go to break. Our guest is here, so I'll just introduce. You can introduce him right now.
All right.
You want to do that? We don't need them.
Yeah.
We don't need them to break
on the
right now.
Right now, yeah, right now, yeah. I got it. Right now, we have Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats on the line. What's up, Kevin?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Oh, doing good, Kev.
All right.
How you doing, my man?
Good, man. I wasn't traded. I'm still here. I'm not talking to a bunch of guys in LA. So I survived. Yeah.
Oh man.
That's hilarious, man.
I know that's right.
Right. Speaking of traded, the Nats traded Max Scherzer and Trey Turner to the Dodgers for right-hander, Jose Gray and catcher Hubert Ruiz and two minor leaguers, righty Gerardo Correa and outfielder Donovan Casey. How does this move help the team going forward?
excuse me. It definitely helps the team in the sense that Ruiz looks, he's immediately their number one prospect now. He looks like a really good hitting catcher, someone they really haven't had since Wilson Ramos. And basically, he's a switch hitter. His strikeout rate's really low. He like almost never strikes out, which is really odd in this day and age of baseball. And you know, if you YouTube him, his power looks really good. He's got a really nice swing. There's a clip on YouTube of him having like a 3-home run game in AAA, and he looks like a monster. So that's going to be a really good pickup. Ruiz, Josiah Gray pitched last night. He looks good. You know, a young pitcher, it's only his third major league start, but his fastball is really lively. He's got a curveball and a slider that are pretty solid and a changeup that he's still working on. But, you know, he would profile probably as a number two or three starter, hopefully, you know, in a year or two when he's like really developing. So, you know, those two ads are really good. The other guys, Carrillo is also a starting pitcher prospect. And Casey's an outfielder with some power, hopefully. You know, I'm not exactly sure how soon they would be ready to really contribute to a big club. But, you know, I think it was a good move for the Nats. I mean, at the end of the day, they weren't going anywhere this year. They only had 2 more months of Scherzer anyway. And, you know, they had an extra year of Turner, but they probably weren't going to be able to sign him. Or if they did sign him, they'd have like no money left mm-hmm. to pay anyone else or to form a team. So sadly, I do think it was time for the Nats to rebuild. And I do think with this move, they, you know, some of the other moves they made, they really upgraded their minor league system a lot, you know.
You have answered like a lot of my questions. You're listening to the Urban Sports City part of Empire Media, empiremedia.com. Right now we have Talk Nats Kevin Nibley on the line. So you mentioned Trey Turner. You're saying that, you know, it made sense to get rid of him, but were you surprised that they did get rid of him? I thought Scherzer would go, but I didn't think, just because of the discussion with Will, he started making me think that maybe Scherzer would get traded, but Trey Turner did surprise me.
I was surprised, and I think the rumor on the street is that Trey himself was like pretty surprised. I don't think he was expecting to get traded. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think what it was is the trade deadlines changed a lot. So, you know, other teams aren't giving up really good prospects like Ruiz or Gray for Reynolds. So I think to get two prospects like that, the Nats had to consider throwing in Turner. And I do think when you look at the way their payroll's structured right now, they don't have a lot of money committed moving forward, but they do have, they're giving like $35 million to Strasburg next year. And I want to say $23 or $24 million to Corbin. And, you know, for them to then sign Turner to, you know, Turner would probably get a Rendon got, you know, it'd be like a 7-8 year $30 million plus season deal, you know, that's already there. You're getting close to half your payroll just with those three guys. And, you know, sadly, the minor league system hasn't been great. There's not a ton of young depth, you know, before this series of trades. Mm-hmm. So if they were to have signed Turner, then, yeah, you'd have, you know, really good. You'd have Turner and Soto and you know, but then you'd have Strasburg and Corbin. Corbin hasn't been very good and Strasburg's been injured. And then, you know, you're going to need to fill 22 other slots with $90 million or $100 million, and that could be hard, you know. Mm-hmm. So I do think with where the Nats were at, it sadly it made sense to get rid of Trey, who, if he was a free agent, you know, if you did re-sign him, he'd be 30 mm-hmm. in the first year of that. So it's like by the time the Nats would be ready to maybe be really good again, he'd be, what, 33, 34, playing shortstop and probably have to move to, you know. And one thing to keep in mind is there are also a ton of shortstops that are going to be available as free agents in the offseason, like Trevor Story, Carlos Correa, Javi Baez, who just went to the Mets, like, I think maybe Marcus Semien. There are a bunch. So the Nats could theoretically sign one of those guys, you know, and then they would have gotten a bunch of prospects too. So maybe they play it that way.
Kevin, let me ask you a question. Because I guess my rationale is, you know, if you decided to get rid of Max Scherzer, then effectively kind of your World Series, that window, you know, that window for the World Series is kind of closed. And mm-hmm. the core guys of that team are pretty much been sold off. How does this team kind of think, like, the vision of resetting going forward, right? You know, we mentioned, you know, building around Juan Soto, but do they, you know, do you think that they've got enough from these trades to kind of restock their farm system and that's the way they go, or do they go with free agents and more trades to kind of make this team competitive again?
It's a really good question, and it'll be interesting to see. Basically, you know, I would think they're going to want to be competitive sooner rather than later. And one of the reasons I think that is a lot of the pieces they got back in these trades are guys in AAA or pretty close, or even Josiah Gray already had a start or two. You know, these are guys that are close to the majors, either this year or next year, they'll be rookies. So they didn't go out and get a bunch of guys that were in single A that are, you know, 3-4 years away. So I do think they're going to want to come back soon. They will have a ton of money. You know, Corbin, they only have on the books for 3 more years. And past that, they've only committed to Strasburg. So they'll have a lot of money to retool in free agency. But I think my guess, if I had just had to guess, I would say probably if you're a Nats fan, I wouldn't put a playoff deposit down in 2022. I don't know if they're going to really try to go for it next year. I think next year might be another lean year, but you know, maybe by 2023, they would be back on their way up, because they also have a couple other prospects like Cade Cavalli and Jackson Rutledge, young pitching prospects. So, you know, I think if you're a Nats fan, your hope would be maybe by the end of 22, you have Cavalli, Gray, and Rutledge in your rotation, and then Strasburg's kind of coming back from his surgery. And at that point, you'd have 4 pretty good starters, and then the team would be ready to buy some free agents.
So I had one question, too, about Juan Soto. So do you think that – do you think they're able to keep Juan Soto now? I mean, like, give him an extension to keep him for – pretty much the lengthy. So you do think so? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of people throw out this thing, you know, on Twitter and in the sports columns that the learners are cheap, but I don't really believe that, because if you look at their payroll, they've actually spent up to the luxury tax pretty much every season. And a couple of years, I want to say like 2016, 2017, they were above the luxury tax. You know, they actually were penalized. And the problem is, in baseball, if you go above the luxury tax, they start taking away your draft picks and your international money. And, you know, that international money is how he even got a guy like Juan Soto in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, so I do think they will have the money to sign him. Whether or not he wants to sign here, I don't know. That's going to be up to him. But, gotcha. I do think they will be able to put forward an offer, you know, at the top of the market. Like, I think they'll offer him at least what Tatis Jr. got, and probably more. It's just a question if he wants to take it, or if he wants to go the Bryce Harper out of going right up to free agency. But, you know, also when you think of Soto, he's only 22. Like, a lot of these prospects they just got are older than Soto. So Soto is still remarkably young. You know, Trey Turner was going to be 29 next year, 30 mm-hmm. by the time you re-sign him. So does 22. So, you know, that makes a lot more sense to commit $30+ million a year to a guy like that, who, you know, even if you sign him for 10 years, you know, he's you're going to have him through all of his 20s and just a little bit into his 30s. So we'll see. But I think they can, and they'll try. It just, you know, it depends on what Juan Soto wants to do. I'm sure anyone, he can go anywhere he wants, pretty much.
Do you think that, so, you know, Max is beloved here. Max, it seems like Max loves it here, too. Do you think, and after this season, he's a free agent again, does he come back? Do you think he can come back?
I wish, you know, I would. There's nothing I'd love more for, you know, him to pull. I think what the Yankees did in 2016, where they traded Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs,
took
Gleyber Torres, and Chapman just came back. I'd love it if that happened. I don't know. I'm not part of the Lerner family. I have no idea how they want to spend their money. I mean, yes, in theory, if they wanted to just push in next year, re-sign Max, just sign a bunch of free agents, go for it, and, you know, go over the tax, they certainly could do that. I'm not sure that I see them doing that. I probably would not expect Max back. I would think, you know, like they say, you know, Father Time's undefeated. Yes. I mean, he's amazing, but he is, I think, would be 38 next year, thereabouts. So he's probably got, at best, a couple years left. And I would think he would probably want to spend it with a team that for sure is going to be in the playoffs. But, you know, never say never. Yeah. You know, I hope he comes back.
I don't know. See, that's the thing. He already won a championship, and he's with the Dodgers. They'll probably win again because the Dodgers are stacked. And so let's say he wins two championships. He's a free agent. I mean, why not, you know, end his career off with a team that it seems like he loves in the Nats?
I hope so. I mean, and you know, I'm sure they could offer him. It would probably the comp would be what they the Astros did with Verlander.
Exactly.
It'd probably be like a 2-year $60 million. Maybe they could get him for even a little less than that.
Yeah.
They'll have the money. I mean, they definitely have a lot of money for next year. It's just a question of whether Max is going to want to play his last 2 years on a club that you know, might not be ready to go back to the playoffs. And you know, I guess we just would have to see.
Okay, so I have one controversial question before I let you go. Since you didn't answer our last question, so I don't have to ask. Will, do you want to ask the question? Because I don't think you have to. So maybe not. All right.
I'm going to ask the question.
This question? Okay.
Biased.
Okay. Go ahead. Because, you know, I'm biased. I could do it, you know, because you know how I feel.
You're extremely biased.
I don't even deny it. I don't deny it at all. Go ahead, Will.
Okay. Kevin, do you think Davey Martinez is to blame for the early massive reset for this team?
No, not at all, really.
Kev, you don't agree with me? Okay, go ahead, Kev. Continue. I'm sorry.
I honestly, you know, maybe I'm rare as a Nats fan, but I don't really have too many problems with Davey. I mean, I think I think the Nats problems in 2020 and 2021, their roster issues. The team had next to no depth. You know, they've been trading away a bunch of their younger players who ended up being starters, like, you know, Luzardo and, you know, Robbie Ray, and the list goes on and on of prospects they've traded at the deadlines over the years that could have at least been on this team or provided depth, you know, and there wasn't any depth. So the second there are any injuries in 2020, the second there are any injuries in 21, that's when you have guys like, no offense to Sam Clay, but it's like the injuries, and you have these like guys that, you know, it's arguable if they should even be in baseball, like pitching every night. And you have, you know, that's when you're pulling guys like Alcides Escobar, you know, into your everyday lineup and hitting them leadoff. It's been a roster issue for a while. I think that's why they finally decided to sell the vets to hopefully get some younger guys to fill out the depth on the roster. I mean, even when they won in 2019, I mean, they won that. They beat the Dodgers and the Astros literally the only possible way they could have, where they won every game that Scherzer and Strasburg pitched.
Yeah.
They used Corbin in relief, and they only used Doolittle and Hudson, really. Like, maybe Rainey once every so often. But, I mean, they beat, like, two amazing teams based off of, like, five pitchers. So I think Davey's actually done a really good job with what he's had. So I don't blame him. I don't think – and the reason I think that, it's not like any of these guys – the Nats. It's not like Eric Thames went to some other team this year and hit 40 home runs. It's like these guys aren't going to other teams and succeeding. They're like out of baseball when they're done here. We've really been at the bottom of the barrel, I think. So I don't blame Davey. I think he's done what he, you know, I don't know if he's always the best tactician game to game, but this roster's been pretty rough. We've been good at having stars, but we don't have the depth that you know, you really need to compete. You know, the second there's an injury or two, it's over.
So on Twitter,
thank you for your honest.
Wait, Will. Let me read this tweet. Can I read this tweet though, real quick, Will, before you try to denounce my opinion? All right. So Malcolm Harden tweeted about the same question. Said about Davey. Yes, Davey is an awful. Davey is an awful in-game coach, terrible lineup guy. Other than leadoff legend Kyle Schwarber, and 2019 and 2019 was a fluke. Yeah, you know, he kind of vibing Malcolm right now. But we've talked about this awful on Twitter, Kevin. I actually have a lot of respect for the Nats roster. I kind of like that because I look at other baseball rosters and I compare it to other rosters, and I'm like, the Nats have one of the best baseball players in Juan Soto. They have one of the best baseball players, and this is, I'm not being redundant, in Trey Turner. And a lot of and then you got depth of guys who can just kind of get you 20 to 15 home runs. You got versatility in your whole lineup. You have power, you have speed. There's just so many things you do have, you know what I mean, that within a lineup that certain teams don't have. And I'm talking about teams with lesser talent who are consistent, perennial postseason contenders. Not to say championship contenders, but postseason contenders. Like, you look at – let's look at what Seattle's doing right now, like the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not – their roster isn't close to the Nets at all, you know. And I'm looking at teams like that. Even when I look – I'm an Orioles fan, right? So I'm an Orioles fan. And when Buck was managing that team initially, no one thought after a couple of years that that roster would be able to go to the postseason. Because I guess when I see that you have a stud, like Juan Soto isn't just – when I watch him, he's like kind of like an old-school baseball player. He's just not just a stud. He's a guy that doesn't strike out. He looks for his pitch. You know, he's patient. Yeah. You know, he's not over-swinging. He's going with the – he's just – he's that dominant to me. And you got that guy, and you got a guy like Trey Turner with him. You even – guys like, you know, Bell, who's now kind of gone to the means of being a, you know, 20 home run hitter. Yeah. Fucks to me, and Kyle Schwarber hitting some X amount of home runs when he was here. I'm like, you should be better. Like, you should still be better. I'm not saying being great, but better.
I feel like the pitching's been right. I guess, like, you took an optimistic view of the lineup. As a Nats fan, if you had told me, like, if we, you know, when we talked, I think we talked on opening day, you know, if you had, like, laid out, if you told me, like, okay, like, Strasburg's not going to pitch this year.
True.
Okay. Corbin's going to be the worst starter in the majors. We're going to have injuries all up and down the lineup to the point where, you know, we're Alcides Escobar's our leadoff hitter for a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have, you know, like just all of these crazy lineups they've had to have. I mean, if you'd walked me through the Nats season in terms of their roster, mm-hmm. if Sam Clay's going to pitch every day, all these things, I would have been like, oh yeah, like at this point in the season, we'd be 25 games under 500. You know, we'd be like way out of it. Like it would have been a disaster, right? Yeah, you know, we'd lose 100 games. But I think they're only what, like 6.5?
Yeah, like, yeah, still not that far out either, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but I get what you're saying. He could be I think he overused. The problem that I have with him, the biggest problem I have is he'll take a reliever who's doing well. Like at one point, Suero was doing well a couple of years ago, and Rainey was doing well, and he'll pitch them every single day till they get injured or they become ineffective. And then like they lose their confidence. And then when they come back, they're not as good as they were before. Yeah. So I do think there's some bullpen issues for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So that's all I wanted to say. I'm not going to even go in on a wheel. That's all I'm going to say about that situation. I'm not going to be like Will thinks I'm biased. I'm not going to go there. Say, so Kevin, before we let you go, what do you have featured on TalkNats.com, and how can folks catch you on social media?
Cool. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, just visit TalkNats.com. It's the best place to talk about baseball. And now's a really good time because we're all figuring out who these new players are together. You know, we have a lot of guys on there who give a lot of really great posts about the prospects. You can kind of learn sort of who the next generation of Nats are going to be. And then aside from baseball, I do a movie podcast called Kevin and Brennan Give Notes. It's on Twitter @give_notes. And we have a new season that we'll be doing probably in a month or two. And you can listen to our first season. It was like 9 or 10 episodes. It's pretty fun. So, yeah, that's me. And I'm K_Nibley on Twitter. And, yeah, thanks a lot for having me as always, guys.
Anytime. So
appreciate you, Kevin.
What's the movie coming out on Friday? There's a movie that I want to watch coming out Friday. I'm trying to think. There is a movie I want to see this Friday. It's a good movie. What am I? I can't think of it. Kevin,
I saw. We're gonna do Fast 9. I didn't like it, but
okay.
It was okay. Yeah, I don't know.
It was a Fast 9. I'm trying to think what. I think it's not a scary movie, is it? I have to think of it. Suicide Squad.
I haven't seen it. I've heard good things about that.
Okay,
sure.
It's coming out Friday. I think it's coming out Friday.
Yeah, they say it's good.
Okay, cool. All right. So you'll write up on that. Will you see it and write up on it or not? Or will you?
I think we're laying out our season. We're definitely gonna do Dune. I don't know if anyone cares about that. We're nerds. We're definitely doing like the Dune remake. And I think we're gonna do Fast 9. And, we might go back to Fast 5, but we're trying to figure out what we're gonna do this next season. But we'll see if we like Suicide Squad, we'll definitely do it.
All right, awesome. All right, Kev, man, thanks for being on. You know, I appreciate you, my man.
All right, thanks, Buzz.
All right.
Okay, see you soon.
See you.
All right.
That was Kevin Nibley. Make sure you check him out on TalkNats.com. You can follow TalkNats on Twitter at TalkNats. All right, make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene at AMP, which is AMP Pyre Media at amppyremedia.com. And this show can be found on DC Podcast. Download the DC Podcast app to hear all of the AMP Pyre Media shows as well as the other great content. Thank you all for listening. Will and I appreciate you. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.